Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of Shift Happens. I'm your host, Alana Brunel, and I have a very special guest for you guys. Welcome to the podcast, Doug.
Thank you. Thank you.
I'm so happy you're here. I'm personally really excited because you're actually the first person that we've had on the podcast that has like that customer perspective and has been really able to be on the other side. Someone that has been in the IT trenches, and I think you're going to give us a lot of great insights. So.
I appreciate that. Thanks for having me.
No problem. So I want to start there. I've learned so much about you in preparation for this podcast. You know, you're a women's bowling coach.
Was.
Big Mercedes fan.
Yeah.
But more importantly, you have just an extensive background in IT. And so let's start there. Give us your background. Where did you start?
My first IT job was as a junior in high school. And I started doing item processing for a local regional bank. And it was like, that's back when you got your checks, like you still got them back in the mail.
Throwback.
Yeah. 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 And so that job was just running, you know, running these checks through this big sorting machine and, you know, balancing and making sure that all the transactions were right. And then, you know, this isn't a financial podcast. So I won't run you through, you know, the Fed Reserve and NASI and all that. But that was a couple hours a night. And then it grew into, you know, running the mainframe for nightly updates and learning that. And then when I started college, I was a computer science MIS double major when I started. And then I was able to shift all my classes to nighttime and then moved into the IT engineering group for that financial institution. So I was a junior in college and learned, you know, imaging PCs, and we were still using static IP at the time. We weren't even doing DHCP there. So every machine came through the data, you know, through the data center, imaged them all, shipped them out. You know, we had, you know, frame relay circuits. And so really was able to, you know, cut my teeth at, you know, at that organization. Worked there for almost 10 years. And so wrapped up my, you know, undergrad in MIS. I dropped computer science, hate programming. I thought, I'll never have to do programming again. That was wrong. And then went back and got my master's in MIS and then recently finished up my MBA in international business. So, but I've gone through a number of different industries, worked for, you know, through automotive, through insurance, spent a little time with an MSP, worked in higher education, and then, you know, now in manufacturing.
That's awesome. I love that you've like touched so many different industries because, again, like you're the perfect person to have come on and talk about maybe some similarities you've seen throughout that time. But let's go to your current role. What's your current role right now and talk about what you're doing within Valmont?
Sure. So I'm the senior manager of global IT operations for Valmont Industries. We're a $4.5 billion manufacturing organization. We have about 140 locations worldwide, and we operate in 30 different countries, 30 plus. We sell all our products and have our products in over 100 countries globally. We are probably one of the largest companies you've never heard of, but it's stuff that you see and use every day. We're mostly known for our center pivot irrigation systems. So if you're flying over flyover country and you see crops growing in circles, that's what we make, but there's lots of other things that we make as well. Traffic control systems, lighting structures, power substation components, power, you know, distribution components, all sorts of industries, globally. And so my role is to lead the team that ensures the day-to-day operations of our IT, systems, make sure everything's up and running and working the way it should. Part of my role also is to manage our network engineering, our UC engineering, so Zoom conference and stuff like that. Edge compute, you know, sort of for our, you know, laptops, tablets, whatever, our OT environments, ensuring connectivity to those, and then our nerve center or NOC. And so all those responsibilities report up to me.
I'd love to get a little bit deeper into what your team does and what you do specifically. But before I ask a question on that, The mission statement of Valmont is conserving resources, improving lives. I think the best way for you to answer what your team does is, how do you guys contribute to your mission statement?
So for the way that we do that is ensuring that what we're doing, it reflects that in a efficient, like an efficient way. We don't want to be, you know, wasteful with our materials. We don't life cycle just for the sake of life cycling. When we do life cycle out, there's a lot of environmental and safety concerns that we take into account. But also just making sure that the environment that our skilled labor works in performs the way it needs to, because whether it's ensuring that they can work effectively or ensuring they can work safely, you know, we're a small part of that. But really, you know, if you network, and I'm sure a lot of our listeners do as well, it's a utility. People don't think about it until it's not working.
Right.
And so I want to make sure that they're not thinking about me. So.
Yeah, that's awesome. You're almost like an invisible part of like your company, but you guys hold up so much of what you guys do. You mentioned efficiency. Like, is simplicity a really big part of your role, simplifying your ops? Like, maybe speak to that a little bit.
Oh, yeah, it has to be. We run a really lean team globally. In the U.S., I have 4 network engineers plus myself, and they drag me in. And then we have another couple engineers over in our IT team in Malaysia. And that's just on the network side. We have, you know, other teams that are, you know, both in the U.S. and, you know, have counterparts at our Malaysian IT center, but we're very lean. Mm-hmm. And so between ensuring that we can support the environment the way that we need to effectively, but also making sure that it doesn't matter if the location that we're working with is here in the States, if it's in Australia, if it's in South Africa, if it's in EMEA, if it's in South America, it's all built the same.
Wow.
That way, you know, we can support it effectively and uniformly. You don't have to remember, oh, you know, this location does this thing, you know, different, and this location does this thing different, because, you know, that then becomes, you know, organizational knowledge. Is it documented? Is it not? How do you train that? Oh, well, someone just has to, you know, bump their nose on it, and then they remember, oh yeah, I'm supposed to do, you know, this other thing there instead. And so that uniformity, scalability, Valmont tends to grow by acquisition. And so having those strong but simple design processes really make sure that we can be as nimble as we need to be in the marketplace.
Yeah, I love how much you value like streamlining things. Like, that seems very important in your role. Mm-hmm. Do you have like a story you could share with our listeners, especially because you uniquely work on a global scale, of a time, maybe like a challenge you had when having to manage your teams globally?
So anybody who's listening that works with global teams, the first one is finding time to meet. Because you're not looking for uniformly convenient times. You're looking for uniform times that are equally inconvenient to everyone. And so, but really the biggest challenge that we have is when you work with companies or you work with partners, almost anybody can do anything here in the States. Mm-hmm. Like, it's super easy to say, you know, I need this service provided, or I need this equipment or whatever. And, you know, getting it in the States is super easy. When you start talking about scaling into global environments, some are still relatively easy. Europe's pretty easy to, you know, to work with and get support in. Australia, same boat. Even through APAC with our Malaysian group. Our Malaysian group, we have a lot of talent there. So kind of a luxury for us. But then you start talking about, you know, we have locations in China. We have locations in Brazil. We have locations in Argentina. And so getting into those areas sometimes is significantly more challenging.
Right.
And so that scalability question, especially because we like to run things the same way, no matter where you're at, we run into a lot of, you know, a lot of conversations where everything's good. And so we start bringing in those difficult countries. Mm-hmm. And then that really starts separating who we can effectively partner with and then who we can.
Because you're dealing with so many countries and locations, and there's all of these issues, I'm sure that also kind of resonates with the people side of it, right? You're managing so many people on a global scale. So you probably have some great leadership lessons for us in that. So I'd love to sidestep there. What advice do you have for people who are overseeing these like large global teams?
I think the first thing that I would say is to be unclear is to be unkind. That's a mantra that I use. And when I think of whenever I'm dealing with either individuals or groups, asking the question, you know, before I send, you know, an email or I send a, you know, a message or reach out for a phone call is, you know, am I prepared to be clear in this conversation? Because especially dealing with global teams, you know, American humor doesn't right. always translate.
Yeah.
Most of the folks that I work with globally, you know, English isn't their first language. Mm-hmm. So if I'm sending something and I'm trying to translate it, the first sentence I said, I put in that message is, you know, my, you know, insert language here is only as good as Google Translate
right.
and then, you know, run it through. And so, ensuring that, you know, you're communicating clearly and then just having that understanding that, you know, a lot of the words you don't necessarily want to take at base value. It sounds right. abrupt or it sounds short or it sounds, you know, what we would call rude, isn't necessarily so. And so, communicating that way solves a lot of problems.
Right.
And so, from that posture, one of the advantages I do have with my background is I'm not very far removed from being an individual contributor on the engineering side.
Right.
I've been in this role for a very short time. And so, understanding that, you know,
you've been there.
Yeah. Those engineers they're not just sitting around looking for things to do. So
right.
if I'm tapping and tasking, there's, you know, I need to be cognizant of the things that I'm bumping down the line or, you know, moving to the back of the line.
I remember like in preparation for this podcast, you talked about like the difference between work that's valuable and toil work. And I think our audience could get a lot of insight from that. Can you double click on that a little bit?
With toil work, the low hanging fruit on that is, well, I just want to automate the toil work, right?
Yeah.
And that's not necessarily the right answer. Automation is important, but you want to automate the right thing. Like, is the process that you're doing, are you stuck with that process? Is that the way it actually has to be? Or are there better ways to do that? And then once you've asked and answered that question, then you know how you can, what automation or what techniques you need to apply in order to optimize that. When I look at my senior engineering teams, it doesn't matter if it's workstation, if it's, you know, networking, if it's unified communications, you know, a great example of this is like PC imaging, right? I don't want a senior engineer, you know, imaging a PC and then shipping it somewhere. Or on my network side, you know, you have your stack of, you know, your stack, your switches, right? They're all in a box. You know, you build forts when you have free time. Well, I need a switch somewhere. So you go grab the switch, you put it on your counter, you know, configure it, get it ready to go, and then you box it back up and ship it out. Like, that to me is toil work. There are better ways to, you know, manage and rapidly deploy or to that equipment. Then I don't have that senior engineer spending time doing that. They're actually doing more, you know, design work or process engineering work. So for me, the race is to drive, you know, the actual toil work down to zero. Evaluate what you're doing from a process perspective. Make sure. Now, there are some times where, you know, in banking or in insurance or even in, you know, with manufacturing, there are just some processes you have to do because a regulation tells you to. Okay. Well, that's, you know, necessary, but you're not going to, you know, be able to cut that out. But these other processes, just because you automated it still doesn't mean that it's right. And so ensuring that you're spending your time cutting that toil work out, then working on automating your processes, to me, it's more of a two-step process.
I really just want to highlight what you just said. Just because you automated automated it doesn't make it right.
Yeah.
I love that quote. It kind of reminds me, like, you've been in so many other industries. Are there any like similarities you're seeing with like such a big company like Valmont, Fortune 750, maybe in comparison to like the higher education role you had? Like, are IT teams going through the same challenges?
Yeah. There's actually a surprising amount of parallels between higher ed and manufacturing. In higher ed, you're trying to figure out the, when I worked for Midland University, that's a small campus in Fremont, Nebraska, but it has two significantly different personalities. During the day, it's an academic institution. So, you know, students are going to class, they're, you know, they're going to the library. Library is actually, at my time there, and I'm sure it's the same way, was really a focal point of the university. A lot of collaborative spaces, a lot of, you know, IT capability. So during the day, that's what it is. At night, it turns into a, you know, small, you know, small town with about 1200 residents. And so the ability to ensure, like, you know, video game systems are connecting the way that they're supposed to, and, you know, that use experience that they're having at home is just as good as what they're experiencing, you know, in the academic setting. In manufacturing, we have a whole lot of unique devices that we need to figure out how to get on the network and perform properly. When we, in manufacturing, especially large industrial where we're at, the, you know, the lifespan of a piece of equipment isn't, you know, 5 years, it's 30 years. Mm-hmm. And so figuring out a way to engage those devices, you know, the needs of them have changed. You know, before, you know, it's, you know, if it's, you know, bending steel or, you know, welding or whatever, back when we first got that machine, it does that really well. But now we want to be able to capture data and telemetry off of it to match modern business practices to older equipment. And so getting that connectivity, that data, we have a highly talented group in operations that's really working through some cool processes to get that telemetry off of devices that weren't designed to give that telemetry. And so, and then they use that to make those business decisions. So, ensuring that the network performs just as well for a, you know, 35-year-old, you know, brake press is just as important as making sure that, you know, somebody's tablet or somebody's endpoint connects to the network properly, and then making sure that it's performing in a appropriate and secure manner.
You focused a lot in your answer on like the technology side, but I also want to shift over to the people side. So you talked about how the role of the IT engineer is changing so much, you know, back when you were probably at higher ed, like their roles and responsibilities and what like they had to bring to the table is probably so different than what they have to bring to the table in 2024. Can you touch on that a little bit?
I think the biggest change that I've seen is that there's a whole lot more value on the generalist, that a lot of, in order to get a more simple environment and remove that complexity, it also removes the need for specializations. And so, you know, on the network side of the house, it hasn't, I mean, a lot of stuff on the network side of the house hasn't changed. I mean, save for you guys, hasn't changed in, you know, 20 years. It's still, how do you fix a problem? Well, I give it more bandwidth. You know, it's just increase the speeds and feeds. And so, but you have advances on the wide area, like, you know, software-defined networking, and where it's not just route tables, ACLs, and who's talking to what. You're actually caring more about what's going across the medium. And so the biggest change, and I'm sure every, you know, a lot of folks have their own stories, but COVID changed so much when it comes to just expectation. Students, for the most part, you have to meet them where they're at. When you're delivering content or delivering material, you can have online courses or hybrid courses. Midland has a lot of student athletes that go to school there. And so, you know, when I was coaching, there was there's homework being done on the bus. We'd grab a hotspot.
I was actually a student athlete, so I totally understand. Yeah, I played soccer in college, and that was actually one of our biggest issues was like, where am I going to get connected? Because I have a game in literally an hour, but I also have so much I need to complete online. So totally get it.
And in bowling, most of the competitions are over the weekend, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, you got a paper due on Monday and you decided to start it on, you know, Saturday when you're sitting on the bus, or Friday, you know, afternoon, when you're sitting on the bus driving to somewhere. It's like, oh, 8 hours to do nothing. Well, you need connectivity in order to split that.
Right.
At some,
right.
And so universities really are, you know, I think we're very far ahead of meeting their user base where they were. Large organizations, they have large, you know, brick and mortar offices. You have a small remote workforce and, you know, basic VPN connectivity. But I mean, higher ed, you have to meet the students where they are.
Yeah.
Well, COVID really changed that perspective where, okay, well, I absolutely have to meet my employees where they are, even if they're in the same town, or, you know, if they're out driving, they drive by the headquarters, you're just not allowed to be here. And so, ensuring that meeting where those, you know, where your users are and effect and delivering their experience effectively, I think is the, you know, one of the biggest shifts here. And so, ensuring that you have robust infrastructure on the back end, while you may be a whiz-bang, you know, network engineer and can make ACLs do anything, you need to understand where you fit in the overall business process. Like, how are your end users actually consuming the environment that you're delivering? Are you actually meeting them where they are, or are you forcing them somewhere where they don't want to be? In manufacturing, making sure that, again, we are backwards compatible enough to speak to some of this, you know, this older manufacturing equipment, but still being able to keep it siloed and protected within the environment. I mean, there's still going to be a requirement for some specialization, but those specialists are going to be expected to have a much broader understanding in the overall business impact of what they're doing.
I feel like we need to get you a shirt that says like meeting end users where they are. Like, that's another like awesome tagline. I love that. I'm actually bummed because I have so many more questions for you, but I know we're coming at the end of time. So I have one more question. We'll have to have you on for a part two. Work called shift happens for a reason. Can you give our audience a time that you had an oh shift moment in your career?
Oh boy. So when you've got, I think the one that pops in my head, and I don't know if this answers the question or not, but I was working for a staffing agency, and we had decided that we were going to migrate from Windows 8 to Windows 10. Like, we, back then, that was the free upgrade, right? And so part of that, my leader wanted me to also reimage these machines at the same time. So figured out the technical process to do that. We had to upgrade the hard, you know, the hardware key first, and then, you know, blow away the machine and reimage it. And so I was like, okay, we got the process figured out. Here's the checklist. Here's the steps that we follow. We're good. So then it's like, okay, well, how long is this going to take? We had about, I mean, this is a small deployment, about 750 or so machines. And so I was like, okay, so I take 10 machines. Brand new out of box. And for you experienced folks, you're probably, I'm telegraphing the mistake here. So I take these new machines, I put them up on a workbench. I've got this really cool USB key that it boots up on the USB. It updates the Windows, gets the new, you know, hardware key. You reboot it and it images the machine. Super cool. So yeah, I'm doing 10 machines at once, just down the bench, check marking along. Got them all done in about an hour. I'm like, wow, okay. So I've got 10 machines done in an hour. I've got 700 machines, you know, bop, 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 bop. We get this done in a weekend, no problem. So we start working on Saturday, and all of a sudden, like, these machines had, you know, spinning disk in them. This is, you know, back a little bit. And all of a sudden it's like, oh, I've got check disk error, and I've got, you know, failed update and rollback and whatever else. And it was a nightmare. And so, so I was like, okay, stop. This is not, we aren't going to work all weekend on this. This is not going to work. And so we, figured out, okay, well, we need to run a check this on these and kind of altered the process a little bit.
Got through it.
But the, the lesson learned here was developing something in the lab and then going, all right, and promising on that, not actually taking into consideration of what it is actually like, again, where your, where your users are or where your, where that stuff's being consumed. There was differences in equipment. There was differences in equipment age. There was even the, the arrangement. You're not going to believe this, but in an office space, everybody's not sitting in a nice, neat line. Right. Like you've got cubes and desks and that time, as well as, with the check disk and everything else, I get added significant time because I didn't take the time to fully appreciate where the users are and what they were doing. So big lesson learned on that one. But that moment where, all of a sudden the thing blue screens, what's that supposed to happen? Yeah. Like, why did it blue screen? And then what is that error? What is this error? And it's just like, watching like little mini mushroom clouds coming out from the cube farm. It's like, this is not, what happened on the bench. And so, in networking, I call them oh no seconds. When if you push a config change, your thing goes away and like, oh no, is it going to be okay? And it comes back. But for those larger moments, that's the one that comes to mind. It's just, that botched rollout. So
yeah, I'm sure our audience will be able to like resonate with what you just said and their own experiences. Wait, what did you call it? An oh no moment?
Oh no second. Because you have, you have milliseconds, you have oh no seconds. So
that's so funny. I love that. Well, thank you so much for being on our podcast. This is a lot of fun.
It was. Thank you. Thank you for having me.
And for our listeners, be sure to like and subscribe to our podcast. Follow us at Now Secure on LinkedIn, Twitter, YouTube. And we will see you guys on the next shift. Bye.